This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show on BFM, and my name is Arif Roos, and as usual, I have not in the studio with me is Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hi, Arif, and actually not as usual because Richard is not with us this week.
Yeah, he's not. Again, very busy man with very big projects, apparently.
Good for him. Less work for us.
As usual, in our show, we will have two parts. The first part where we'll talk about the local car news and some local car launches as well. In the second part, we will be talking about our used car buying guide, which centers around a BMW, but it's also an MPV, but it's also a manual. We'll talk about that later. But first, we're going to do the news. So, first piece of news, as the government wants us to say, face masks are not compulsory in private vehicles. There's been a lot of confusion about this, apparently. I don't know why. Have you heard about these confusions, Daniel?
Well, I think it's because, you know, a lot of people are using it, not using it. Some people are alone in the car. Some people are going out as a family and they think, you know, it's a family. We're already at home together. Why do we need to wear a mask just because we're in the car? I think it's all these issues. And then also, you know, for me personally, when I'm in the car, even with my family, if I put on a mask with the aircon running and everything else, I feel a little bit stuffy, you know, because of the aircon and there's no fresh air. But if I'm out in the open and I'm walking around with a mask, I don't have this problem. So it could be a lot of reasons. But anyway, outside of the car, please have your face mask on.
It's about the same with private hire vehicles like Grab and all that stuff.
Yes.
But I don't think it's compulsory to do to wear the face masks inside the Grabs and everything. But it is recommended, obviously, because people go in and out of Grabs, right?
Yes, but I think, you know, in a private hire vehicle or a taxi, you must wear your face mask because you don't know who's been there earlier and you don't know the history of the driver, and the driver doesn't know your history.
Yep. Anyway, on to some real news, which has to do with Proton.
Yeah.
And apparently, they've launched a different type of CPO business back in 2019, but somehow the news has resurfaced now. Can you tell us more about that, Daniel?
Well, Proton is trying to make sure that their used cars in the market have a certain value. I mean, in the past, if you talk about a used Proton, I'm not talking about 20, 30 years ago. I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago. These cars will just plummet in the used car market for a variety of reasons. Number one, reliability, spare parts, plastics don't last. You know, you can see many older Protons like the old Preve and the old Persona. You know, door handles crack under pressure. Fuel caps are cracked. Side view mirrors are cracked. Basically, plastic bits don't last. And it's surprising because it's made in Malaysia. It's supposed to withstand Malaysian temperature. But the way they crack is almost like a baldi, you know? You take an old baldi and put it in the sun, you know?
It turns a bit white and then very brittle.
Exactly. That's the right word, brittle. So I think what Proton is doing, because now with Geely involved, vendors are putting a lot of effort to make these cars much better. So the plastic bits are better quality. And I think because they want to show that, you know, they're going to deliver a better quality car, even to a used car customer, they've started their own used car business. That's the right way to put it. And they're trying to control the values of these cars by making sure that, you know, used car dealers don't, you know, push the price down. I give you an example. If you go and try and get a loan for a 5-year-old Proton or a 5-year-old Perdua, there's a good chance you'll get the loan on the Perdua, but not the Proton. And this is with a lot of finance companies.
Why?
It's just the way things are with the financial situation. A lot of car financing companies believe that a used Proton will have a very, very short lifespan with the owner for many reasons. But with a Perdua, it'll have a longer lifespan. So they rather finance a Perdua than a used Proton.
Well, this thing, CPO, not CPO thing, that's supposedly, you know, going to control the price of the Protons in the market.
Right.
It's called the UCM, a used car management. And it's, as Daniel says, is to support new car sales and basically to improve the resale value of Proton cars. I feel like they've done this a lot of times before because they've, I think, what was it, 2012 or 2014 or something like that, they tried to get people into newer Protons and they're trying to get them to trade in or something like that. But basically for this one, the UCM, they are looking for 10% sales volume in showrooms with UCM operations. So basically they want 10% of all their sales in these UCM showrooms to be trade-ins or trade-ups per se.
Yeah, and if you think about it, they're doing exactly what Perdua did a couple of years ago when they started their own used car business. They control the market, they control the price, and also they offer a warranty from their dealers which makes, you know, the used Perdua ownership more viable.
Yeah. So what exactly is the difference between this and the CPO then?
Honestly, I don't know. I think it's the same thing. I think it's you know, wordplay, and it's a fancy way of saying, you know, we've got some certified vehicles for you to look at, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. You mentioned about like Proton controlling the price of the Proton market. I mean, right. Protons nowadays, they're generally, what, 5-6 year old? They're generally hovering around 20 to 25 or 30,000 ringgit, right?
Again, it depends on your condition. You know, it depends on your high mileage. And the thing you must understand, a lot of these cars are being used for ride hailing. So their actual values could be much, much lower if it was a ride hailing car.
Well, I guess if it benefits the driver of that car who's trading up, you know, I guess it makes kind of sense.
Exactly.
And after all, when the person who's trading up sells their car back to Proton, it goes on the CPO marketplace, certified pre-owned, of course, and it goes through a 201-point inspection and is certified by the dealer that works on it. And buyers of CPO cars can also get a 1-year extended powertrain warranty and a free oil change as well. So I guess that's kind of a good deal. Depends, obviously, on the condition of the car. But if you're buying a cheaper Proton that's slightly used, that's not too bad.
Yeah, peace of mind. That's the most important thing. A lot of people buying a used car today are worried about a peace of mind. And that's, you know, basically it.
Yeah. Well, moving on to another story, basically deals with Volkswagen. And this story, I think, is a bit irrelevant, but I found it pretty interesting because Volkswagen now fully owns Audi. Weirdly, previously back then, they did not. So back then, meaning before June, Volkswagen owned 99.64% of Audi. But now, they own 100%. And apparently they paid €250 million for the remaining 0.36% of the shares, which is quite insane, isn't it?
Well, they've been paying out a lot of money for recalls and scandals and everything. So I'm just thinking, how much money do they have in their bank account?
I know. This fully owned business thing by Volkswagen to Audi means that Volkswagen can now execute a whole bunch of different things. One of them is the Audi transformation plan, which is basically Audi is going to streamline their lineup and they're going to cost cut a few things, which doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. It means that they're just probably going to cut all the fat off the corners, that's all. But it could also mean that cars like the Audi TT and the Audi R8, current generations, might be the last of their generations. And they will be replaced in the future by electric sports cars that they'll make. So quite interesting stuff, don't you think?
I think they're just going to share the platforms right across. And, you know, from the ID3 to the e-tron, they're all going to have very similar technology and battery technology and charging technology. But the question is now, can they make it all reliable?
Yeah.
Can they make it reliable enough for us to give trust back in the brand? Because Audi has got a huge trust with consumers. There's no issue about reliability with Audis.
Yep.
Now, with Volkswagen coming in, you know, they already have a bad karma coming from there. Will they transfer this to Audi? I hope not, because like with Porsche has got, even though they're under the Volkswagen group, Porsche is very independent with a lot of things they do. Yeah. They don't have a lot of these issues. So I'm just worried for Audi's brand name, that's all.
Now that Audi is totally under Volkswagen, they will be sharing a lot of the stuff. So as you said, the platforms will, you know, it will be changed and it will be shared, and they will build it side by side together instead of currently with the MLB and the MQB platform, which is developed mostly by Audi and I guess transposed downwards to Volkswagen. Right. So it could also mean that bigger Volkswagens could one day be use slightly modified Porsche platforms like the MSB that underpins the Porsche Panamera, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. It could also mean, you know, like with the Macan, the Porsche Macan is actually shared platform with the Audi Q5.
Yeah.
But the Macan is a larger, more dignified, more luxurious vehicle, and the Q5 is slightly less. The price difference is almost, in Malaysia, it's almost 200,000 ringgit. So could that filter down to, say, a new Volkswagen SUV, probably a more luxurious Tiguan, for example, you know?
Yeah,
and then have a bigger engine. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what they have really going on in their little factory.
Yep. And interesting thing that I found out about the Volkswagen Group is that Audi actually made a lot of the softwares that is used across the Volkswagen Group. So even the base software platforms that they use inside the Porsches are also Audi developed, all the way down to Seats and Skodas. So that's pretty interesting. But apparently we will only see the fruits of this labor in 2024 when they start releasing all their new electric vehicles and all that stuff.
Exactly.
So big things to look forward to in 4 years' time, unfortunately. Do you want to do some car launches now?
Yes, please.
Do you want to introduce the Hilux?
oh, this has been long, long coming. The new Hilux, actually the right word would be facelift, not new Hilux, but this facelift actually is looking very, very handsome, very, very rugged. Thailand has just showed it to their people and it's really nice. They call it the Rogue. They got a single cab and they got a twin cab.
Yeah.
And then it's got the new 2.8 engine with 500 Newton meters of torque and 200 brake horsepower. So you can see that Toyota is trying to chase up to the Ford Raptor.
Yeah, I mean, those are really big numbers. 500 Newton meters of torque and 200 horsepower. This new Rogue 2.8 engine also, it's apparently about 20 or 30 horsepower more and about 50 or 60 Newton meters of torque more powerful, which is really, really good.
Yeah.
It will come to Malaysia, I don't know when. Has it launched here yet?
No, not yet. But they are taking orders starting today. Today, they sent out the email saying that bookings are open right now.
Fantastic. Well, there is five variants that are coming, apparently. Like Daniel mentioned, there's a single cab, which is the bottom of the line. 94,000 ringgit is apparently the price. All the way up to the top, which is the Rogue 2.8, which gets you a lot of things. That's 150,000 ringgit. And it's going to come with variable steering. I think that's the first for pickup trucks, isn't that?
Yes.
A limited slip differential as well, automatic, so that if you go off-road or mixed surfaces, it will keep you on the track. You also get the introduction of the Toyota Safety Sense, which I believe is debuted with the new Hilux,
right?
And that gets you radar cruise control, lane departure warning, and pre-collision systems. So that is very, very good, actually. There are a few cars also that have been launched globally. One of them is the Mazda MX-30 mild hybrid.
This is something which we were not aware of at all. Mazda didn't give us even a clue that this was coming. And now they've showed it. You know, Mazda earlier said SkyActiv was the way to go and we don't need to go electric. Then they said, bam, we're going to give you a full electric vehicle, you know?
Yeah.
And then now they say mild hybrid. So I think they've got a lot of things under their sleeve.
They've done more U-turns than the government.
Yes. Well, I think it's because they're trying to surprise everybody, you know, trying to shock the media and the consumer market into saying, hey, we got a lot of technology, we're just holding on to it. So like when they tell us, oh, there's no new Savannah coming out, there's no new RX car coming out, I think they have it and they just haven't decided when to launch it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, you know, back then they released this Mazda Furay sports car.
Yes.
And everybody thought they were going to release one. I bet you that's probably going to come in as an EV form in like 2024 or something like that.
You're very right.
But this new Mazda M hybrid motor, it debuted on the Mazda 3 as well as the MX-30.
Yeah.
And it basically is a 48-volt hybrid system, but it's only a 24-volt. So instead of being a part of the engine, it only supplements the engine. And it gets most of its energy through brake energy regeneration, which has been around for quite a while, but I guess this is a bit more extensive. So it gathers waste energy and directs it into a DC converter that sits at the front of the car and then puts it in a battery for use to power car electronics and the stop-start system. So basically, smooth driving and better fuel economy is the goal there.
Right, because you already got SkyActiv saving fuel, then you got this. So in the end, you got something which is, you know, hardly using any fuel if everything goes right.
Yeah. Considering how Mazda's engines have been doing, they've been quite smooth.
Yes.
And I don't know how much more smooth this can be.
Correct.
But final car, it's a very, very interesting car with an interesting name. It's called the Polestar 2.
Mm. I really like this.
Yeah, same. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Polestar is Volvo's electric vehicle performance arm. And they've launched the Polestar 1 like maybe a year ago. It's a two-door plug-in hybrid coupe. But this one, the Polestar 2, is a five-door fastback. So it's based on the same platform as the Volvo XC40. It looks like a sedan, but raised slightly like Volvo's cross-country cars with a bit more radical Volvo design. So you still get the Thor's hammer at the front. You get big, expansive lights at the back with all of the Volvo safety technologies. But it just looks much, much cooler, right?
The thing with this is because Tesla is great when it comes to technology, when it comes to, you know, delivering cars that work, and, you know, the battery system and everything. Okay, Tesla has got it right. But I don't like the way Teslas look.
Yeah,
you
same.
Know, you know, they're very boring. They all look almost the same. And especially the MPV, it looks a bit dumpy. That Gullwing, they just don't ride with me. But that's my personal taste. I know a lot of other people out there love it. But when I look at this Volvo, and then I think to myself, Polestar, now you got an electric car that actually looks sexy and it looks like, you know, showroom appeal is there. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you do a search on YouTube about the Polestar 2, there'll be like 10 results immediately about people just talking about it. It's the most talked EV in a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And this one is supposed to go against the Tesla Model 3. And it's got two motors, 408 horsepower, 660 newton meters of torque, which means 0 to 100 in under 5 seconds, and roughly 450 kilometers of range. So it's super interesting. It's basically a Volvo, but Volvo without all the leashes.
Correct.
Volvo says you can also subscribe to the car, and it also has a Polestar app that recognizes you via your app and adjusts everything to how you like it. So I guess if you subscribe to a car for a week or a month, and then you give it back and you get into another Polestar 2, it will feel almost exactly the same. Your temperature will be the same. Your seating positions will be the same. All of your settings will be the same. So that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, but you know, reliability. I'm so worried when it comes to cars with a lot of electronics, because the more electronics you put in the car, with our humidity and our heat and our weather conditions, I'm just a little bit worried. But anyway, it's not coming to Malaysia anytime soon. But when it does, we'll wait and see how well it does.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So shall we end this segment and head on to part two?
Yes, sir.
As you heard, we just spoke a little bit about the news, which was about Proton's new different type of CPO business. We spoke about Volkswagen fully owning Audi now, a few car launches, but stick around for part two as we talk about a BMW that's a manual, but also the wrong kind of BMW. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control, the car show on BFM, and my name is Arif Roos. As usual, on this show, sitting at home, probably in the bathroom, is Mr. Daniel Fernandez. Say hello.
Hello, sir, and I'm not sitting in the bathroom.
Not today. Anyway, so if you missed the first part of the show, we spoke very briefly about Proton's new CPO type of business, used car management, basically, and they're trying to get people out of their old cars into their new cars. We spoke a little bit about some car launches, the exciting new facelift of the Toyota Hilux,
right,
and a Polestar 2, and a mild hybrid Mazda. But now we have a used car buying guide, which centers around a BMW, my favorite, a BMW manual, my favorite, that's also 6-speed, but it's also the wrong type of BMW.
Wrong type of BMW for you.
Yes, I should make that clear.
Right.
It's the BMW 218i Active Tourer.
Which is an MPV.
Yep.
Okay, so now we got a bit of a situation here. When BMW launched this car some time ago, a lot of people thought, no, actually, I think it was 2015. Yeah. A lot of people thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, BMW's bread and butter model. It's an MPV. There's a 5-seater version and also a 7-seater version. But when it arrived, it didn't carry that actual BMW design look.
Yeah.
You know, like the X cars, they all look very aggressive, chunky, chiseled edges. And then the cars, of course, there's no BMW that doesn't look nice. But when this BMW came out, the Active Tourer, the 2 series, they called it, and it was just a little bit boring.
And yes.
I even had some people make the comment that, oh, it looks a little bit Korean in its design, and it looks a little bit dumpy. And I said, no, think about it this way. BMW had to find a middle ground, because think of the Mercedes B-Class.
Hmm.
When the B-Class first came out, it wasn't the most popular vehicle in the market. But as people started getting in and out of it and they realized this is a great family vehicle, even though the Mercedes B-Class wasn't a 7-seater, it had great family features, big boot, easy to get in and out at the back, easy to get in and out in front. So if you're talking about elderly parents, you're talking about young kids, putting them in a baby seat, it makes a lot of sense. So BMW yeah. followed the same magical needs of a family person. So they made their car easy to get in and out. It's got a lot of boot space if you don't have the 7-seater or if you put the seats down. And it's easy to load the kids into the rear seat because of its ride height.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the roof height, you know, the whole thing, when you open the door, there's enough space to maneuver in and out. Now, making it look fast and furious is not going to be possible because this is a family vehicle.
Yeah, now, definitely not.
Yes. So when they launched it, the price was just above 200,000 ringgit, a lot of people said, oh, very expensive BMW, you know, yes, but you know, it doesn't look all that great. To make it further less interesting, sorry to say that, was the 1.5 liter engine.
Yeah, that engine, that engine powered the 118i, but you, when you put it in such a, I guess, a big car like this, yeah, that kind of doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, again, you see, when we first test drove this car and we did a review, there were a lot of negative comments about, oh, it's, you know, it's slow, it's a 1.5, how is it going to go up Genting Highlands? The usual, I know everybody thinks about Genting Highlands, but you only go up once a year. And then people say, oh, how are you going to manage on the highway? Now, we took it out for a test drive. We are a family of five, okay?
Yeah.
With five people, three adults, two kids in the car, there was no issue. Of course, we didn't go up Genting Highlands, but there's no issue climbing any hill. If you go around Bangsar, there's enough steep hills for you to test drive this, you know?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, on the highway, reaching 160, 170, 180, not an issue at all. And you shouldn't be going that fast because the speed limit is 110, you know? But if you want to say, why can't it go that fast? It can. But this is not designed for speed. This is not designed for fast cornering. It's a well-sorted family vehicle. It's firm. It's solid. It's built well. For what you pay, I think you shouldn't complain too much. You're buying something in the premium segment. But then what happens is, at that time, people were not willing to accept a 1.5 engine. This was 5-6 years ago. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
The thought of a 1.5 engine, especially coming from BMW, was just all wrong. Come on, man. How can they give us a 136 horsepower engine to put five adults in? No, not possible. And then 0 to 100, 9.2 seconds. Oh my God, this is too slow for me. It's a BMW, not possible. Again, it's a family vehicle. But now, 5 years later, of course, you don't see many units sold, so there's not many in the market. But now, 5 years later, it comes into the used car market and people are starting to notice it. Why? Because its price is so reasonable. For about 80,000 ringgit, you can buy a five-year-old 2-series Grand Tourer family vehicle with the BMW branding, with a nice engine, with of all the features, safety features that you need. And then you think about it, now I can live with the 1.5 engine. Now I can live with the fact that it doesn't look so BMW-ish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Now that it's used, the best part about it is its cost, because there are a couple of cars with the same profile, 5-seater MPV, you got slightly bigger boot,
right,
relatively small and affordable to run engine. Right. And, you know, you have the Volkswagen Cross Touran that didn't sell much as well, but
yes,
the Ford C-Max, Mercedes B-Class, the one that you mentioned just now, which is roughly about the same price, but those cars are, you know, 2012, 2013, so they're about 7 years old already. And if you think about it and you look at all the interiors, the BMW just seems to be built the best.
Actually, I will not totally agree with you on that, because around the same time, Citroën launched the Grand Picasso.
Ah, yes. Forgot about that one.
And the Grand Picasso was selling for almost 100,000 ringgit cheaper brand new because it's a Citroën.
Yeah.
Nothing else. But it was slightly larger. It had a better engine. And the best part is today, the selling price of a Grand Picasso against this is about the same. It's about between 70 to 85,000. But the Citroën has got a better lasting interior. Don't ask me why, but if you get into these cars, you look at the Citroën interior, it seems to have last a lot better. Maybe because there's not so many in the market. I don't know. You know, I'm just assuming that.
I mean, I've only seen a couple of these 2-series active tourers running around, but I've never seen a, what was it, C3 or C4 Picasso or something like that?
Grand Picasso, actually. It was called a Grand,
oh, Grand Picasso. There's a few things that we need to nail down about this car as well. I mean, the first of which is the fact that this is, when it was launched in 2014, this was BMW's first front-wheel drive car and their first MPV.
Right.
Everybody was complaining, oh, it's not a BMW, it's not a BMW. But BMW themselves said that this 2-series Active Tourer and the Grand Tourer, which is the 7-seater version, was a car that's built to attract new customers.
Yes.
And 4 years later, after this car was launched in 2018, they said, these cars are likely never going to be replaced. So you will probably only ever see these two MPVs from BMW, because they said that these models are no longer part of what our brand today stands for.
Right.
With them releasing like the X1, X2, X3, X4 and everything, there is literally no place for the Active Tourer to survive. But they did say that, you know, it achieved what it was built to achieve. I believe in Europe, when it was launched in 2014, 2015, 2016, they did really well, almost knocking Mercedes off their perch of that premium SUV brand for these MPVs, which was Super interesting.
It was easy to do because at that time, if anybody owned a BMW, needed a family car, they couldn't go anywhere else. Suddenly comes the active tourer and they say, whoa, I can buy this for the wife. I can buy this for my dad. I can buy this for my kids to just go to school, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If you had a growing family bigger than the five of you, you were basically relegated to an X5 that wasn't a hybrid because the hybrid would have replaced the seven seats.
True.
But with this car and that, with the bigger one, the Grand Tourer, you could fit everybody into your BMW, which was quite interesting.
Right.
How does it drive though? I've never driven this car.
Okay, to be honest, when we took it out, we took the automatic out to be for test drive. And why I say automatic, because you know there's a manual version. So we took the automatic out and it was nice. It was okay. Nothing spectacular. Like I said, 1.5 engine, you can't expect too much out of it. And you've got five adults. But you know, it's easy to drive in the city. It's easy to find a parking. It's easy to see. I mean, not easy to find a parking, easy to park because it's not that large, you know?
Yeah.
Despite its seven-seater ability, it's not that large. And then vision out, very nice. The way the driver's position is, very nice to see out. So I think it's one of those cars which, you know, if you're like my age, if you're getting old and you want something to retire with and you need space, this is a very good option. Number two, if you're a young family and you want something premium because you want to keep up with the Joneses, then this is a nice car to buy secondhand. Now, if you talk about the manual, when we took the manual for test drive, and the reason why we did that was because at some point, BMW Malaysia gave it to one of their dealers to clear a whole bunch of manual versions.
Yeah, that's the question I was going to ask you because obviously you were part of that press conference. But why? Why did this even exist?
A certain number of cars were brought in. Of course, they bring it in on a special allocation and then they use it for a very, very big event. So the cars are actually used by their drivers to move people around the event. You know, BMW Malaysia gets involved with a lot of sporting events, great sporting events. Of course, these cars have low mileage, but then they're considered used. And because it's used by their drivers, they don't need to bring a high-spec car in. So they've got cloth seats, they've got a manual gearbox, you know, they've got slightly downsized wheels. But one of the dealers who had this car in his lot was selling it for 199,000 ringgit, and it was just a few months old. So that's almost an 80,000 ringgit discount. At that time, you know?
Yeah,
And it was the cheapest BMW you could buy. So I had a relative who I said, you know, this is a great car for you. So we went over to the dealer and they said, Daniel, here's the key. Take your relative out for a test drive. You do the sale since you know the car well enough. And I almost got in love with the car. I almost fell in love with driving it because when you get into a manual German car, any German car manual, you suddenly realize how light the clutch is, how easy and precise the gearbox is.
Yeah.
And then even though it's using a 1.5 liter engine, you're able to extract more grunt out of that engine because it's a manual gearbox under your control.
Yeah, I totally agree about that German manual's point because I remember doing a road trip in Europe and I had a Volkswagen Golf rented.
Right.
And I was sitting up on that Mont Blanc tunnel, which is always jammed.
Right.
And I didn't suffer because, you know, you're sitting in stop-go traffic and you're having a manual gearbox, but everything's fine.
Yeah, because the clutch is light. The gear changes are so light and precise. You know, you can just flick it with your finger, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, a lot of Malaysians don't realize this because the manuals don't come into Malaysia. Or when they do, nobody gets a chance to test drive it. So my relative, who currently still has his BMW 2 Series Tourer manual, is still running it very happily.
I bet it's a lot of fun.
Well, he's a little bit older than me. So the fun factor is not there. But the fact is, it's cheaper to maintain. There's no issues. You know, the car has not given him any problems. Fuel consumption is good. He drives it in traffic every day and he has no issue with his left leg or with his arm using the manual gear shift.
I can understand, definitely. It's just weird for me, you know, as a BMW fan, that the last manual BMW that BMW Malaysia sold was an MPV with a 3-cylinder 1.5 turbo, which is quite bizarre. You would have expected maybe a 118i with a manual gearbox or something like that.
Correct.
But that's, I guess, a conversation for a different story. Obviously, this car is a front-wheel drive car. The platform is based on the UKL2, which underpins the Mini Clubman and the Mini Countryman.
Right.
The Mini Countryman is actually a pretty good shout. I mean, it's relatively the same price, about 80,000 ringgit. Right. But when you compare the Mini Countryman, it looks visually huge, but inside it's not that big, right?
It's very tight. Mini, somehow or other, the Countryman, the Clubman, they're all large on the outside. Even when you take up a car park space, you realize that they take the space quite much, you know?
Yeah.
But when you get in the car, it's very compact.
Yeah, it feels small.
Yeah.
the difference is, I should say that, both the Mini Countryman and the 2 Series Active Tourer and the Grand Tourer, they're mechanically about the same. They're powered by the same gearbox, yes. Engine, everything's about the same. But somehow the Grand Tourer and the Active Tourer 2 Series, it looks smaller, but is way bigger inside the car.
Yeah.
I think the way they sold the cars in Malaysia was that the bottom rung was the 1 Series, and then they had the X1, and then this, the 2 Series Active Tourer, right? And it kind of makes sense because the 2 Series Active Tourer, the boot was about 100 liters bigger than the X1. And because it was slightly taller, you got more space and you can fold the middle seats as well. So quite an interesting proposition, right, this car?
It is. And I think a lot of people have just skipped by it because not knowing exactly how easy it is to own compared, and especially the manual, you know?
Yeah.
Then, of course, you know, there are BMW diehard people like you say, oh, it doesn't look, you know, it doesn't look like a true BMW. But listen, you know, a BMW is a BMW. You don't have to go so far.
Any last words about this car?
I think a lot of people should think about it. Imagine 80,000 ringgit, you get a 7-seater premium vehicle. Most of them have been well looked after. I don't see, you know, people buying these cars and modding it and putting fast wheels and modified exhaust. So a lot of them will still be in their stock condition. Dealers are not getting a good price on them, so you can really push your price down. I've seen as low as 75,000 ringgit. And test drive the manual. Don't ignore it. Test drive it. Even if you're saying, oh, you know, I'm traveling in traffic every day, sending the kids to school, going to supermarket, I've got a career and everything else. Try it out for 5 minutes in traffic and you'll realize it's not that difficult to use.
If any of our experience had to go by, it's the manual gearboxes of these European cars. Very, very good. Right. Very good.
I'll just finish by saying this. My wife drives a German manual car in traffic every day and she doesn't complain.
What is it?
Not for this show.
Okay, I'm gonna say it's a Porsche 911 then.
No, it's not. She drives a German manual car every day in traffic and it's no issue.
All right, so that was our used car buying guide for the BMW 2 Series, more specifically the 218i Active Tourer or the Grand Tourer. Costing about 70 to about 80,000 ringgit.
Correct.
Roughly par for the cost for any other MPV in the market. Try out the manual and you have honestly a car that's bigger than an X1. What's not to like?
Exactly.
This has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9. My name is Arif Roos and that was
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my.
Obviously, you can visit his website to catch up on some news and some articles and some pretty interesting stuff. And don't forget to visit our Instagram page at BFM Cruise Control. This has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.